Meeting will come to order. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Present.
Chair Duggan.
Present.
Vice Chair Fabricio. Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky.
Here.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Benjamin.
Present.
Barrero. Botana.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Franklin. Griffiths.
Here.
Bacon. Rudman.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Stevenson. Tant.
Here.
Temple.
Here.
Tremont.
Here.
Woodson is excused. We have a quorum, sir.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum for the March 27th, 2023 Insurance and Banking Subcommittee. As a reminder to all present, please silence all electronic devices. Members, please remember to turn on and off your microphone before speaking. Before we get underway, I just want to observe that barring some unforeseen eventuality, this will be the last meeting of this committee for this session. And I want to begin by recognizing and thanking our tremendous staff who've worked very hard, providing great quality work product at all hours of the day and night for us to be able to do these meetings at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning as an example. So I want to start by representing Kimberly Young, our administrative lead, Olivia Fletcher, Jennifer Fortenberry, I don't know if she's here, Nick Sellis, and of course, our policy chief, Eric Lloyd, and our staff director, Kurt Hammond. I want to thank our sergeants who keep us fed and watered and safe. Thank you for always keeping everything safe and secure here. Our ranking member, Hanshofsky, it's been a pleasure serving with you. Thank you for your great debate. And thank you to each of you for your great debate and your commitment to this process this year. It's been a pleasure serving with you. So with that, we'll get into our agenda. Our first bill is HB 1573 by Rep. Persons Mullica, Continuing Care Providers. Good morning. You're recognized to present your bill.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, members. It's a pleasure to be before you this bright and early morning to present House Bill 1573 relating to continuing care providers. This bill will help to ensure the future viability and financial strength of the continuing care retirement community model in Florida. The bill has the support of both continuing care residents as well as providers. It is based on their experiences, and it modifies current laws affecting access to capital, expansions, and escrow requirements in order to reduce cost while streamlining reporting, the OIR examination process, as well as increasing transparency and notices to the residents. Members, that is the bill.
Thank you. Any questions on the bill as presented? Seeing none, we have two amendments. You are recognized to explain amendment number one, barcode 432073.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this amendment deletes a single word four for clarification purposes on line 147. It also clarifies that when a consolidated financial statement is provided, that it must also include the separate financial information for each of the additional entities. Members, that is the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, public testimony on the amendment? We have none. Debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Thank you. Without objection, show that amendment adopted. We are moving on to amendment number two, barcode 599483. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a technical amendment. It strikes unnecessary language, and it also adds the words or governing body in addition to governing board for clarification purposes. Members, that is the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, any public testimony on the amendment? Okay, thank you. No, there is none. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Without objection, show that amendment adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. We have public testimony on the bill as amended. Thank you. Steve Ballmer, Leading Age Florida, wishes to speak. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee.
My name is Steve Bamer. I'm the president and CEO of Leading Age Florida. Leading Age Florida is unique in that we're the only association in the state that represents the entire continuum of care for aging services, which means our members provide affordable housing for low-income seniors in addition to assisted living, skilled nursing, and continuing care retirement communities. And I thank you on behalf of our members for hearing the bill this morning. I want to thank Representative Persons-Mullica for sponsoring the bill. There are 70 CCRCs in Florida. 68 of them are members of ours, so we're pleased to have the bill in front of you this morning. As the representative mentioned, the bill was developed in conjunction and collaboration with our partners at the Florida Life Care Residents Association, and we're excited about the opportunity for this bill to help foster expansion and strengthen the CCRC model. It's an important part of the retirement portfolio that Florida offers to seniors, and we're grateful to have worked with FLICRA and the representative on this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next public testimony is from Bennett Napier, Florida Life Care Residents Association. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I want to thank Representative Persons-Mullica for her sponsorship of this legislation. Just want to give a few more remarks in part of the last reform of this nature for 651 was 2019, which was a very comprehensive reform. Our association represents just under 14,000 residents that live in 58 of the continuing care retirement communities, including Westminster Oaks here in Tallahassee. The average age of residents in these communities is 85 years old. Many of them are middle-class retirees, teachers, civic workers, retired military. So we appreciate your great support of this morning and voting in favor of this bill. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We have no other public testimony. We're in debate. Any debate? Representative Tant.
I love Westminster Oaks. I represent Westminster Oaks. And I will tell you that the community is a thriving community. The folks who live there love it. And the security that they have, knowing that as they age and as their health conditions either it become more impaired or have greater needs, they don't have to worry. They don't have to leave. They don't have to find another home. These communities, what's great about this bill is it will allow us to develop more communities across the state. And as we all know, Florida is the leading state for senior citizens. And so I love this bill. I really urge you to vote in support of this bill. My community loves this bill, so thank you.
Any further debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Persons-Mullica having closed on her bill. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabricio. Ranking Democratic Member Honshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Barrero. Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy. Yes.
Franklin. Griffiths.
Yes.
Flaken. Rudman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson. Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
Tremont.
Yes.
Woodson is excused. The bill passes.
By your vote, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, members.
Members, our next bill is by Representative Brackett, HP 791, taxes on purchases made through private label credit card programs. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. HB 791 raises the 64.4 limit to 100% on the amount of sales tax that can be recovered on the unpaid balance of a worthless or uncollectible private label credit card account. Give you a little bit of history on this. What this goes back to is that in 2014, the House and Senate had a final budget set for their tax amount they would allow. There was not enough money to go with a full 100%. Therefore, at that time, Senator Lee made the motion to make it 64.4%, which was all that was left in the budget, and that passed, and now that's where we're at today, and we're trying to raise that to 100% now. That is my bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions? Members, questions? Representative Franklin.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and great bill. Thanks for bringing this to discussion. One question that I did have was around once the company, like Lowe's, can kind of get a refund on those taxes. Let's say it's uncollectible, so it's gone now to collection, so it's on like a consumer's credit report. Is that portion that they're getting that refund on, I guess, or can no longer need to have to pay, is that also going to be pass along to the credit consumers, the consumer's credit report as well, like as an amount?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a good question. I believe that amount would be adjusted to the final amount when it's updated on that, when they actually receive that money back in there. I can't say that with 100% certain, but I'm pretty sure it does. I was in the credit reporting business for 30 years and have not been there since 2005, but at that point in time, that was the actual amount that was on there, yes.
Follow-up? Representative Temple. Okay, thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, I see no amendments. We're in public testimony. French Brown, Florida Retail Federation, waves in support. Thank you. We have no further public testimony. Debate on the bill. Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
Wave close, Chair.
Thank you. A bracket having wave close. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabrizio? Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Ferrero? Botana?
Yes.
Hannity?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Placon?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson? Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson is excused.
Thank you. By your vote, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Our next bill is by Representative Bankson, HB 1353, Commercial Financing Product Brokers and Providers. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Duggan, and thank you, Ranking Member Hanshofsky, and all of our members, thank you for this wonderful Monday morning. Today I'm presenting for your consideration House Bill 1353 relating to commercial financing products and brokers. Simply put, the bill requires providers of commercial financing to provide simple and clear disclosures that allow business owners to make accurate comparisons between different types of financing. This legislation codifies best practices for providers of non-bank commercial financing and brokers to benefit the Florida businesses and the state's economy. The proposed legislation standardizes the disclosures related to total cost of capital. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Seeing none, I see no amendments. Public testimony, Abby Vale, Revenue-Based Finance Coalition, waves in support. Thank you. We have no further public testimony. Any debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
I'll do this on Monday morning every time. I'll wave close.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabrizio? Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Barrero? Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Placon?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson? Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson is excused. The
bill passes. Thank you. By your vote, that bill will be reported favorably. Our next bill is by Representative Griffiths, HB 7035. You are recognized to present from your seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Vice Chair, Ranking Member. This bill saves from repeal a public record exemption for certain portions of risk assessments, evaluations, audits, and other reports of Citizens Property Insurance Corporation cybersecurity program. And it also removes a redundant public record exemption. And that is the bill, sir.
Thank you. Questions, members? Seeing none, I see no amendments. Any public testimony? We have no public testimony. Any debate? Seeing none, Representative Griffiths, you're recognized to close.
Wave close, sir.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabrizio? Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Barrero? Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Placon?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson? Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson is excused. The bill passes.
Thank you. By your vote, that bill will be reported favorably. Our next bill is by Representative Fernandez-Barquin, HB 1267, Consumer Finance Loans. You're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vice Chair, Ranking Member, members of the committee. My bill deals with Chapter 516. Chapter 516 are consumer finance loans. These are loans that are not even given by banks. These are special institutions that operate in their own state statute. And what my bill would do is increase the interest rates from 18, well, currently they're staggered. It's 18, 24, and 30%, raises them all to 36%. You may be wondering why I would want to raise interest rates. The reason here is very simple. One, currently you could go online, and our constituents can currently go online and get loans for astronomical APRs, which are much higher than these, up to 99%. I have personally found an even 149% in certain cases. So right now, these individuals who are unbanked are more than likely using these other products or possibly using illicit funds from an illegal lender. What I would call a loan shark. So what this bill will do is widen the amount of people, basically, who would qualify, all right? And these people that would be otherwise being subjected to higher APRs would be able to take out loans under this bill. So it would just widen the availability of these loans. The second reason is with the high inflation rates that we have all seen and you all have I'm sure personally can testify to these high interest the increase in interest rates now have made people that otherwise would have been capable of qualifying for these loans now not so much because of these high interest rates. So this bill will also make sure that that individuals that otherwise would have been able to previously qualify for these Chapter 516 loans now can qualify for Chapter 516 loans. And also, this bill also includes certain reporting requirements, certain safeguards that are not already in the statute, such as, for example, the total number of loans that they have outstanding, different brackets because these loans are from $0 to $25,000. So the amount of loans that are in within each one. I also have an amendment in regards to reporting requirements for the amount of delinquency loans that are between. Well, I'll address the amendment later. This bill will also require that in the event of an emergency that delinquency fees are waived. And that's a bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Rep. Benjamin, on the bill as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some have labeled this product to be predatory lending. Can you explain why such would be false?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Rep. Benjamin, I can assure you that these individuals, when they take out the loans, unlike these online loans, when these individuals come in person to these physical stores, which there's roughly about 430 of them in the state, and there's one in my district that I have personally visited, these individuals go in, they meet with a person, and before they can determine how much they qualify for this loan, the person behind the counter will essentially do a budget with the person, with the applicant, and see how much money they make, you know, monthly, weekly, biweekly, or whatnot. They'll figure out what the expenses are for these individuals, how much they're paying in rent, how much they're paying in the car loan, and basically try and do everything to make sure that they can qualify. Some interesting numbers that I personally asked for from some of the individuals, some of the companies that partake in this, is I was curious what their turn down rate was, right? So people that go into these loans and ask for the loans, how many of them do they say no to? One of them was 60% of the people that come in they say no to. Another one was actually the turn down rate was 80% or close to 80%, and another one was 70%. So I mean, any sort of fallacy that or argument that these people are going in and these people are just giving away. The license holders of 516 are just giving away money to anybody is not true. I mean, the way they make money is making sure that these are investments and that people are paying back these investments because their business model is based on the interest. It's not unlike other states where they can charge an astronomical fee for refinancing. The business model here is not to incentivize them to refinance. The business model is for them to make a wise investment with these applicants and for the money to be paid back.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you've explained is what most folks call in the industry under some form of underwriting. So why is this particular underwriting process considered proprietary in nature, and it's not something that we collect so that we can see and determine for ourselves whether the lending practice or process, whether it's predatory or not?
Rep. Benjamin, just to clarify, when you say we, are you talking about the state or a regulatory? Okay, thank you. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a fantastic question. The underwriting mechanisms is not the typical underwriting mechanisms for these individuals, whereas the three large credit reporting agencies, they look at certain markers. These underwriters look at other markers, and it's not even unanimous. I mean, they each have their own proprietary software, if you will, and way of calculating to see if someone qualifies or not. So, I mean, that's a great question, but that's also something that makes these individuals different from others. And also, in case you were wondering, when it even though these loans are from $0 to $25,000, and I know I'm straying, Mr. Chair, from the question, even though these loans are from zero, or the statute permits from $0 to $25,000, I think it would behoove the committee for them to know that the average loan for one of the large providers is roughly $4,800, another one is $9,200, and another one is $4,100. So it's not like they're trying to max out what the amount of loan is that these people can take out also.
Follow up?
Yeah. Thank you for your indulgence. Currently, there in your bill, there is some reporting requirements in the bill. One I didn't notice was the default rate. Is there a reason why? And if not, can we get that added?
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, that's exactly what my amendment is the amendment actually covers the total number of required reporting for the total number and dollar amount of loans with delinquency status listed as current or less than 30 days.
We have a couple other questions on the bill.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Rep. Benjamin, if you can stand by, because he's going to present that amendment. Thank you. And then you can follow up on the amendment if you'd like. Rep. Steele.
Thank you, Chair. I just want clarity because you said about refinance, but are majority of these loans taken out to pay off higher interest rates?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have that information. It's possible. I know some of these loans are also taken out just to qualify to open up a bank account in certain circumstances. Yeah, but as far as paying off other high interest rate loans, I'm not quite sure, and I can't represent to you that.
Hold on. Rep. Tan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you describe, like, the consumers that are seeking these loans and typically what they use the loans for?
You recognize?
From my understanding, Rep. Tant, a lot of these individuals are basically have a family emergency, right? I mean, we cannot forget that in certain I think it's roughly – I had some figures jotted down, some statistics – specifically in regards to the amount of, I think it's something like roughly 40% of Americans cannot handle an emergency that costs $2,000. I mean, 40 or 50%, right? So these loans basically cater to individuals who are unbanked, who live paycheck to paycheck, who cannot qualify for a loan from a bank, yet have an emergency. I'll get into statistics later in my closing in regards to the amount of people who are unbanked, which is pretty staggering. But this is basically for an individual who has little to no credit or poor credit and who has an emergency and doesn't have the funds readily available and can't borrow from a family member, can't borrow from somebody else. But I mean, that's generally the situation, is some sort of an emergency.
You recognize?
That's pretty sobering. Follow-up question. When these folks, how long do they typically take to pay back the loans, and do they, and how much, I know we're changing the interest rate in the bill. What is the change up there when they do pay off the loan?
You recognize?
So for one of the service providers, it's 46 months is the average term. Another one is 32 months. And I believe that the most that they can offer in the term-wise is 60 months, or typically the cap is 60 months. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, what was the second part of?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for the double question. So when they have, so how much do they typically pay? Like on, so what the, what's the overall life that could be the length of the loan, and then what would they pay on what they're what they're paying on the, on those loans?
You recognize?
I can tell you what the average rate is for some of the service providers. For the one for $4,800 is the average loan. The average APR is 25%. For the average loan that's $9,200 for another service provider, it's 22%. And for another loan, for the other one that is $4,100, the average interest rate is 27.4%.
Follow up. Ranking Member Honchovsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, will anything in this bill affect those who currently have loans under this program?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Rep, the way that these individuals, the applications, when they go into the store and they sign these financing agreements, it's a contract. So, I mean, it's a set percentage. It's not like it fluctuates or anything like that. Going forward, it would not be retroactive. But, I mean, I am amenable to playing with the date for the reporting requirements, if that's something that would make you more comfortable with the bill.
Follow up.
Yes, and just to clarify, the 36% is a cap. It's not a mandate that it's now 36%. Just want to clarify.
You're recognized.
Correct. It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a cap.
Thank you.
Rep. Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this bill. It's got great components that include access to capital to people that normally wouldn't have access. My question is around, and my concern is around the current, let's say, profile of, you know, someone that's a consumer that's getting a loan, or let's consider it that cohort. And today, there might be an interest rate that they're paying today. And I know the intent of this bill is to ensure that we increase access to capital to those who would normally get turned down. But is there any oversight that's going to happen to ensure that the folks who are, and I'm not saying the individual person, but their profile, their credit profile, that future person that comes in after this bill is passed, to ensure that their interest rates aren't going up?
You recognize?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are certain actors in this space that already successfully report successful payments to these individuals, because the way that the big three credit agencies operate is that they will not take a look at a loan, or they will not consider a loan that is beyond, I think, a month as a part of their calculation when it comes to determining someone's credit. So there are some actors in this space, I think most of them actually report to the credit agencies. So they help people build credit, and they help people get out of the hole that they're in. I cannot speak as to whether or not the interest rates would increase, but I would think that someone who has a successful history of paying back these loans would subsequently have a lower interest rate as time goes on.
Follow up?
And just my follow-up questions around, is there a report that we might could consider requiring, where at least from our perspective we can see if the profile of this cohort before this bill might have had a certain range of interest rates. Now, after this bill, did it truly just expand access to credit, or do we end up essentially now allowing companies to now offer, obviously, higher interest rates because of the bill's passage? And that's just, you don't have to answer that question, but I guess you can.
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that's definitely something to consider. So I'll sit down with the shareholders and see what they and see if there's a way to calculate that, because that would be an interesting statistic to see how over the long run it's helping individuals. I mean, it may be a little tricky to track each individual's, but maybe taking the average credit of a certain group, or maybe sample sizes, maybe a way to do it.
One more. You're recognized, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to make it simple, I'm not wanting to include the new folks that have access to credit. I know that I throw off the numbers, just kind of the previous profiles that would have qualified for lending. Just to, yeah, thanks.
Rep. Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking about what you said about the folks who don't have credit. Can these consumers who use these loans build a credit rating for themselves with these loans?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Generally, yes. There are certain providers. I'm not sure if all of them do, but I know for sure there is one very large provider in the space that prides itself on doing that and helping individuals build their credit.
See no further questions on the bill. We have one amendment.
Yes. Yes,
you are recognized, Chair, to explain amendment number one, barcode 588167.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill increases the reporting requirements to include the total number and dollar amounts of loans with delinquency status listed as current or less than 30 days past due, 30 to 59 days past due, 60 to 89 days past due, and at least 90 days past due. So it increases reporting requirements to be able to see how many delinquency loans there are.
Questions on the amendment? Rep. Benjamin, did you want to follow up? Okay, thank you. Other members? See no questions on the amendment. Thank you. Public testimony on the amendment. Scott Jenkins, Florida Financial Services Association, wishes to speak. He's waving in support. Thank you. We have no further public testimony on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close on the amendment.
Thank you. Without objection, show that amendment adopted. We are on the bill as amended. We have public testimony. The bill as amended. Thank you. Jackson Oberlink, Florida Rising, waves in opposition. Thank you. He waves in opposition. Scott Jenkins, Florida Financial Services Association, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott Jenkins. I'm a lobbyist here in town, but I also have the privilege of being the executive director for the Florida Financial Services Association. The FFSA is made up of consumer finance companies that specialize in serving Florida's household credit needs with traditional installment lending. We are here in support of HB 1267 as it promotes the beneficial alignment of interest between borrowers and lenders in expanding credit options for Floridians. The bill will strengthen Florida's regulated non-depository lending market by expanding accessible and affordable consumer credit options for more hardworking Floridians. Traditional installment lending has been a safe and affordable credit product for over 100 years. Our installment loans contain fixed interest rates, fixed terms, and fully amortizing level payments to support household budget management. Each loan is subject to strict underwriting requirements, including assessing a borrower's ability to pay to ensure that our customers receive loans they need with payments that are manageable to promote a successful consumer outcome. The members of FFSA operate primarily from brick and mortar branch networks in local communities around the state, supporting those communities with jobs and lending capital for customers. Currently, Florida's statutory rate structure limits state regulatory non-depository consumer finance lenders from providing wider market access to more affordable options for Florida's household credit needs. In many cases, this forces many Floridians into less desirable forms of credit that often carry significantly higher rates than what the bill can offer. While at first glance, lower statutory interest rates may seem better for consumers, in reality, rate structures that are too restrictive to serve the market often have the opposite effect. Overly restrictive rate structures often cause more consumer loan applications to be denied, with most FFSA members having turned down rates of 70 to 80% in Florida. The allowable interest rate on a loan is a direct reflection of both the risk associated with making a loan and the ongoing relationship with the customer through community-based branches, which facilitate successful consumer outcomes. Without an interest rate comparable to serving a broader market, the underwriting standards enacted by lenders become too restrictive, and access to this proven beneficial credit is reduced, especially for consumers with historically limited options. The lack of access to credit was examined by the New York Fed Reserve Bank in a recent study which analyzed the constraints of credit access nationally on a county-by-county basis. Each county in the U.S. was assigned a credit score ranging from credit assured, meaning credit available on demand, to credit insecure, meaning that consumers did not have adequate access to credit in the amounts needed and the costs they can afford. In this study, 30 counties in Florida were rated credit insecure or credit at risk, meaning there was low to no credit options for the credit for the economic demographics of those counties. And three of the counties were in the bottom 50 in the country: Glade, Lafayette, and Union. Florida currently has only about 220 brick-and-mortar locations in the states. States with better rate and fee structures generally have over 1,000 locations, even in states a third of our size. Those states have a more competitive environment that greatly allows borrowers to comparatively shop. In Florida, most branches are in locations with little nearby competition. Consumers want to borrow locally. The lack of access to traditional consumer credit has caused many Floridians to turn to online lenders that are not licensed and regulated by the state of Florida. These online lenders utilize federal preemption and bank partnership models to import rates from other states, with some interest rates ranging as high as 150%. According to Credit Bureau data, in 2022, over 317,000 loans were made in Florida through online channels, totaling over $3 billion in loan volume, accounting for 45% of the consumer lending market in Florida. To be clear, the rates offered by online lenders are higher than what is proposed in this bill. They also produce jobs and tax revenue in those states. The proposed rate structure in this bill will allow lenders in Florida to appropriately gauge risk and loosen underwriting restrictions, as well as provide a better basis for competition with online lenders to provide more positive outcomes consumers in Florida. As with all sectors, inflationary concerns affect consumer buying power and the cost of capital. Traditional installment lenders are not depository entities, meaning that we do not accept deposits from customers like banks and credit unions. The lending capital that is dispersed to our customers comes from lines of credits and other financing instruments that are dependent on market conditions. Just as inflation increases the cost of consumer goods, inflation also affects lending markets, making available capital scarce. This scarcity impacts the underwriting criteria of lenders, causing a tightening of available credit offerings. The tightening, coupled with a decrease in consumer buying power, often creates a scenario where consumers cannot qualify for loans and amounts necessary to meet their financial goals. The rate expansion in this bill will allow lenders and consumers to better navigate inflationary effects by giving lenders more flexibility and allowing consumers to get appropriately sized loan options to meet their financial objectives. In addition to expanding credit offerings, the Consumer Lending Modernization Bill will protect customers with longer delinquency timelines, suspend fees and late charges, repossessions, and court actions in a FEMA disaster-impacted areas, inform those affected by disasters about lending programs to help them, require yearly reporting to regulators in order to identify problematic lenders — there was a question about that earlier — and give OFR a greater ability to identify bad actors with new licensing requirements. The language regarding disasters is not in statute in any other state. The bill will move Florida to a modern lending landscape that is able to adequately meet consumer needs through expanded loan offerings, navigate inflation, and provide lenders with the ability to better compete with online lenders that are subject to Florida law. I wanted to answer some of the questions that were said earlier. You had, Representative Steele, you had asked about higher interest loan. The number one reason people come into our stores is for debt consolidation, usually from very high interest credit cards. So we consolidate their loans and can bring their payment down. There is no cap on the length of time. We work with our customers with the three variables of amount, interest rate, and time. We can get a number, a monthly number for that is acceptable to the customer and build it into their budget. We credit counsel and we budget for our customers. We want to see successful outcomes, or we do not make the money that we project for the loans that we make. The opponents of the bill have largely tried to couch us as being predatory, and that we will be raising rates on people that currently get loans in Florida as well. That makes zero business or ethical sense. Why on earth would we alienate our current customer base while we're attracting a new customers to our businesses? In a business that is largely word-of-mouth, customer experience-oriented. So that makes zero sense.
Mr. Jenkins, I need you to wrap it up.
Okay, I have one last statement. This bill simply increases options for borrowers. increases in-state competition for lenders to keep, then that will keep rates lower, and regulation of our industry. And you don't often have time to have somebody come in here and say they want more competition and more regulation, but that's in fact what we're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches, waves in opposition. Christy Arnold, Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Christy Arnold. I'm the Associate for Social Concerns and Respect Life with the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. We oppose HB 1267 because the bill contains a drastic across-the-board rate increase for Chapter 516 installment loans that we believe will harm Florida's low-income consumers. By eliminating the current three-tier structure and dramatically increasing the maximum interest rates, we foresee increased costs for these loans as a result of this bill, as Chapter 516 lenders are likely to sell options at higher costs. And this change is unnecessary for the maintenance of the industry, and we believe it moves consumer protections backwards for Floridians who actually do benefit from utilizing Chapter 516 loans in their times of need. We oppose HB 1267 and urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. That was a lot that you just heard about what this program does. We are opposed to this legislation at this time for the reasons stated by my friend at Florida Catholic Conference. As you've heard from the representative and from the representative of the industry, this program serves and assists financially vulnerable individuals in the state. And we are not objecting to that. Our concern is about the changes being made to the structure with increasing the interest rate. Just to remind, currently, and I think, Representative, you said the average loan is about $4,800, according to your research. So a loan at above $4,000 right now is 18% in an interest rate. And this bill would double that rate to 36%. That's a big jump. I'm struggling a bit to understand how getting rid of the tiered structure and raising everybody to 36% interest helps expand access. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't get that. Nothing in the program structure is changing. None of the good parts about people coming in from community and getting counseled and all the stuff they're doing now, that doesn't change. And raising an interest rate to 36% across the board doesn't impact that. It impacts the vulnerable, financially at-risk consumers who are getting the loans and processing them. The amendment helps because one of the big concerns with this program is the lack of information on the impact on your constituents. It helps. It's getting there. The concern is it's kind of the cart before the horse. Perhaps it would be more helpful to get an OPAGA study to really answer all these questions, to provide borrower demographics, rate of default, numbers of borrowers that are sued for failing to pay off the loans. Let's get that information before making some dramatic changes in this program. So we would urge you to consider that as part of the process. And I just want to quickly share with you some of the organizations that are opposed to this bill. Together for Hope, you already heard, NAACP, Florida State Conference, Jacksonville Area, Legal Aid, Legal Aid Orange County Bar Association, the Florida Policy Institute, Capital Good Fund, State Innovation Exchange, Associate for Social Concerns, Florida Council of Churches, Self-Help Credit Union, Florida Consumer Action Network, Latino Leadership, Floridians for Honest Lending, Solita's House, Legal Aid of Palm Beach County, Legal Aid Service of Broward County, Catalyst Miami, Public Interest Law Section of the Florida Bar, and then my organization, the Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy. Again, it's not a concern about there are concerns about the existing program, but it's the primary concern about increasing dramatically the interest rate that these vulnerable consumers are paying with no additional real protections for them. Thank you.
Austin Cheney, One Main Financial.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you for your time this morning and the ability to see the Florida sunrise at this early start. I'd like to address some of the concerns that I've heard in the committee thus far. You know, when we talk about expanding access to credit and expanding interest rates, what we're really talking about doing is enabling the borrowers in the state to expand their risk profiles to allow more consumers in. That is how access to credit operates in rate cap states like this. Basically, you have an underwriting criteria we have to stand to, and if we are not appropriately underwriting the customer, what we see is inadequate consumer outcomes that are positive for the consumer. And so the idea of expanding the rate structure is essentially expanding the roof we can put over those people. We can bring them in for lending for the loan purposes that we talked about earlier. I think the key here is that what we see with this demographic of customers is they need more help, they need more servicing. That is where that rate goes to. The rate does not go in our pockets. Sometimes the rate goes directly to impacting those consumers and providing a servicing angle on the back end. I think the other piece here that's being kind of talked about is the notion that the 18% interest rate, the 24% interest rate, or any of the rates in the structure right now are protecting consumers. What they're doing is limiting consumers from access to credit because of the turndown rates. As Representative Barkeen, Fernandez Barkeen said earlier, we've averaged typically about 75 to 80% in a turndown rate. This year, we're averaging 85% year to date. And so what we see when you have a restrictive rate structure in place is limited access by consumers and more restrictive underwriting, which limits their ability to get loans. So while the rates look appealing, we're talking about 85% of consumers that cannot qualify currently in this space. And so, I think that the term predatory gets thrown around a lot. Predatory lending is lending that is not designed to benefit the consumer and not designed to have consumer outcomes that are positive. Our loans are that way, and we can prove that through our charge-off numbers or our delinquency rates. You know, they typically hover in the single digits comparative to other types of lending. And the reporting structure in this bill will enable us to go and look at this moving forward and to be able to really quantify how these loans are impacting consumers in the state. OFR typically used to have a report that would come out yearly. That has not been the case for, I think, somewhere around 30 years or 40 years now. This creates an ability to have that look back and to understand what's happening. But if if there was a study that happened right now, the only data you get is exactly what I just said. So I would urge you guys to, support the bill and, quite frankly, support your constituents and their ability to provide their financial needs.
Mr. Cheney, you have some questions. Rep. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So from my understanding, currently, at the 18%, that's a loan that's from that's above $4,000. So they get it at 18%. So now 85% of the people don't qualify for that loan. So we're raising the rate. So now a person who needs a loan over $4,000 can get it now from anywhere between 18% to 36%. That's what we're proposing.
You're recognized.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So essentially right now, the way the rate structure is set up, it goes 30 to 3,000, between 3,000 and 4,000 is 24%, and then it's 18% between 4,000 and 25,000. It's a blended rate structure, so essentially it's an average of those rates down the pike. So if you think about it, from 0 to 25,000, it ranges between 30 and actually about 19%, depending on how it operates, depending on the loan amount in that space. So what we're doing instead is simplifying that rate structure to be one rate, and then allowing, whenever we underwrite that customer, we're going to basically take into account their ability to repay, their disposable income, various other factors. And again, I think that was your question earlier about underwriting, was the idea of how do we underwrite these loans in a way that we can benefit the consumer. We look at thousands of data points, not just the credit. I mean, FICO score is one of our single metrics. We look at thousands of data points, including cell phone payments, rental payments, utility payments. We have to be able to innovate that underwriting model to make these loans perform, because these consumers typically are thin file or don't have the appropriate credit backing or have other negative credit history in the past that we have to kind of look around. So the way the rate structure will operate basically is you're going to have the ability to underwrite up to that amount if you need to, But the but as the loan amounts go up, the credit suitability also goes up, and those consumers have more options. So essentially what you do is create a marketplace where you have more competition, where the customer can go and shop and find the rate that fits them. And so if our rate, you know, One Main isn't the right rate, they'll have more competition to come in to the state. And I think that's really where we're talking about here, is the ability to have more solutions of scale for what the need is here in Florida than what currently exists.
Follow up. Thank you. Sure. Ranking Member Hunchofsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I had a question. What you mentioned that if they can't get the money here, they go to these online out-of-state companies. What are their rates that they're charging, or what is the maximum that they can go to?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pardon my quickness. There's a large contingent of lenders out there in the online space that also self-cap at 36% like our companies do. The difference there is they have additional fee structures they put on top. The problem with those loans is that they don't necessarily have the same kind of outcome that we have because of that servicing angle on the back end. The customer that comes to us needs more servicing than the typical customer, and so they're able to come to our branches and do that. The larger lenders in that space, it really varies. You can have some that are 99%. I've seen 149%. I've seen some as high as 199%, depending on where they're at. And they're able to do that, not in a legal sense, but through federal preemption of bank partnership models. So essentially, if you have a bank and it's in any state in the union, they can import rates into any state, and then the lender can basically partner with that bank to originate the loan and then service it after the fact. So they are doing it in a legal manner, which is why if you don't choose that business practice, having a safe, affordable credit option here in Florida is so important. And the ability to have that performance is better when it's in-state and regulated here.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with this amendment, are we now going to have more information on the people who, on like what the percentages are of people who are able to complete these loans for in-state and the out-of-state, so that we're understanding whether this is having the outcomes that are desired?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, what the loan reporting requirements do, so I believe sometime in the 80s, the OFR ceased collecting data. They used to produce a little book. It was kind of neat. You'd get it and be able to flip through it and kind of see what was there. But they stopped doing that for some time. And so what this does, basically you're going to get loan volumes, you're going to get loan amounts, you're going to get delinquency rates on those loans, you're going to get charge-off amounts. And when you compare delinquency and charge-off together, charge-off are loans that basically were not successful and were basically removed from the balance sheets of being in the profit category into the loss category. That delinquency amount, though, is going to show you how many of those customers were having issues during the time of the loan. And so if you have a charge-off number that equals a delinquency number, what you have is essentially a wash situation where consumers were not getting what they needed and basically these loans failed. But what we see in states where we report this, and we do in about, I think, 10 or 12 other states, is you see a charge-off number that is low and a delinquency number that is high, but the delinquency number indicates that we were able to work with that customer that had an issue and get them back into the loan and really rehab the situation if there was a problem. And so that is the key characteristic of our lending that I believe is differentiated from other lending. Because of the loan term being as long as it is, we have more time to work with customers who run into problems, such as, job loss or income insecurity, and we're able to provide them resources to be successful in the loan.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And are these loans secured by personal property? And if so, are they considered loan failed if the personal property needs to be taken in lieu of payment?
You're recognized.
So it's kind of a mix. Each lender kind of has their own sort of way to do this. At One Main, we do take security on loans depending on the loan size, although we do offer unsecured loans. I think it really just depends, again, it's dependent on loan size. But, yes, I would categorize a failed loan as if we have to repossess the property. That is, at that point, you've gone so far down the path and the relationship with the consumer has gone so poorly that you're basically in a collection scenario at that point. And so I would consider that a failed loan, yes.
Follow up.
Yeah, thank you. And you consider it failed, but would it come up as a statistic as considered failed when we're reporting what the final outcomes are?
You're recognized.
Those loans would be considered in the charge-off numbers that are in part of the reporting requirement.
Thank you.
Members, we're in debate. Thank you, Mr. Cheney.
Thank you.
Members in debate. Any debate? Are you recognized to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. repent. I found the statistic I was looking for, and it's that more than half of the people in this country could not come up with $2,000 in the event of an emergency. I read a book. For those of you who don't know, my first and second session, I ran a similar bill that dealt with Chapter 516. After I ran those bills, I jumped into the rabbit hole of doing research on this issue because it really fascinated me. And there's a fantastic book, if any of you want to read. I read this book. It's called The Unbanking of America and How the New Middle Class Survives by Lisa Servon. Fantastic book. And it dives into how payday loans, these sorts of loans, prepaid debit cards, and check cashing stores have survived and are surviving and are essentially flourishing right now. And this is not a knock on banks, but for those of you to understand how we have gotten here is that historically, back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, banks used to be community banks. You could go to your bank and get a loan like this. You can't do that anymore, all right? And this isn't the bank's fault. It's just a business structure that the banks have taken. The banks basically make a ton of money off of fees right now. Just to give you a statistic, back in 2011, Americans paid $38 billion in overdraft fees, okay? Not million, billion. Another statistic here is that 4.5 currently, actually, I think this is 10 years old. This statistic is 10 years old. 4.5% of U.S. households are unbanked. 5.9 million households. Currently, this one is also 10 years old. 20% of U.S. adults are unbanked or underbanked. The FDIC does a survey of unbanked and underbanked Americans, taking into account 10 years or about a dozen years. And what they calculated was that 8% of Americans do not have a bank account. 8%. It's a lot. And 20% of Americans have a bank account, but also rely on alternative sources as well, just as the ones that I named previously, prepaid debit cards, payday loans, check cashing stores, or these sorts of loans. So there is a demand here and there is a need. All I ask is that we give these actors who are now going to be more regulated and more supervised the ability to open up and expand their roof to provide these services to other individuals. Thank you.
Rep. Fernandez, Joaquin, having closed. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabricio. Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Griffiths. Plakin.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson. Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
Tremont.
Yes.
Woodson is excused. The bill
passes. Members, by your vote, that bill will be reported unanimously favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Our next bill is by Representative Daley, PCS for HB 1299, Payments for Worker Compensation Expert Witness Fees. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and Ranking Member. It's great to be with you all. I think this may be one of your last bills as a committee, but it certainly should be the quickest. This bill increases the maximum hourly allowed expert witness fees for healthcare providers from $200 to $300 per hour. Per statute. That's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, I see no amendments. We have public testimony. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Sorry. Rep. Rudman.
Thank you, Representative Daley. Is it my understanding that that this change would increase the payments to physicians who are expert witnesses?
You recognize?
That is correct. Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, there are no amendments. We are in public testimony. Jared Fowler, Florida Medical Association, waves in support. Fraser Cobb, Florida Orthopedic Society, wishes to speak.
I was going to have the quickest bill of the day, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Daley. I'll be super quick. We appreciate this legislation. Access to care is really important in the workers' comp system. This will go a long way to making sure physicians continue to be encouraged to participate in workers' comp. It's one of those structural barriers we need to address moving forward. So just want to say thank you to Representative Daly and the committee for considering this bill.
We have no further public testimony. Any debate? Representative Redmond.
Representative Daly, I think it's worth saying that this is really helping physicians, and I greatly appreciate it. I currently don't see workers' comp, but thanks to this bill, I may consider it. Thank you.
Further debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I just want to thank you and the committee for hearing the bill. You know, look, it's not a colossal change, but I think it's a significant step in the right direction, and I think it'll lead to more providers working in this area. So with that, I close.
Representative Daly having closed, Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabricio. Ranking Democratic Member Hunshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Griffiths. Plakin.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson. Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
Tremont.
Yes.
Woodson is excused.
By your vote, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Members, our last bill is HB 1545 by Representative Stevenson and will be presented by Representative Kennedy from her seat regarding health insurance identification cards. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair and members. Good morning. HB 1545 is focused on patient empowerment. It allows current technology to assist Floridians with their healthcare issues and help them resolve their issues more quickly. It's a QR code technology on each health insurance card, which will direct consumers to an existing website hosted by CFO Patronus, assist patients with common health insurance issues, identify if their plan is state or federally regulated, direct these patients to the appropriate regulatory agency if they're at an impasse with their health insurance. Members, this is the bill.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Seeing none, I see no amendments. We have public testimony. Jared Willis, Alliance for Patient Access, waves in support. Thank you. Jared Fowler, Florida Medical Association, waves in support. Razor Cobb, Florida Orthopedic Society, waves in support. Tony Large, Florida College of Emergency Physicians and Florida Society of Respiratory Care and Florida Society of Rheumatology, waves in support. And Martin Lyon, Florida Osteopathic Medical Association, waves in support. We have no further public testimony. We're in debate. Any debate? Representative Redman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kennedy, for this wonderful bill. I'm looking at my insurance card right now as I'm talking to you, and a lot of times it's hard to even know what kind of policy you have. Speaking as a provider, we get questions all the time. We get phone calls from patients that would like to be seen at our clinic. And the first question we ask is, well, you know, do we take your insurance? What's on your card? And even when a subscriber pulls their card out of their wallet and looks at their card currently, sometimes it's hard to tell. Is this an HMO? Is this a PPO? Is this a Medicare Advantage plan? And so certainly this bill is a step in the right direction because information is valuable when a consumer is making decisions about their health care. So I greatly appreciate your efforts on this bill, and I will be voting up.
Further debate? Seeing none, Representative Kennedy, you're recognized to close.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fabricio. Ranking Democratic Member Hunshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Griffiths. Plakin.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson. Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
Tremont.
Yes.
Tremont. Woodson is excused.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. That concludes our agenda. Again, let me say how much I enjoyed serving with each of you. Oh, Ranking Member Hunchovsky, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Duggan. I just want to say thank you to you, Chair, for being the consummate professional, always being available for discussions and being so generous with all of us, questions, debate, and everything in these committees. You are a pro, and it has been such an honor to serve with you on this subcommittee.
Thank you for those very kind words. It's been an honor to serve with you as well. And let me say, I hope to serve with each of you next session. Thank you. Ranking Member Hunchovsky moves we rise. Without objection, we are adjourned.